This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome to the Forging Wellness Podcast, where we go beyond the basics of health and wellness to build stronger minds, bodies, and communities. I'm your host, Jesse Clark, a firefighter, paramedic, and coach with 19 years as a first responder. I have a passion for this job, for my family, and for truly enjoying life. But I'll be the first to admit I haven't always gotten it right. Had my ups and downs, made mistakes, and learned some lessons the hard way. But that's what this podcast is all about. Learning, growing, and forging a better path together. We're diving into mental and physical health, fitness, nutrition, sleep, leadership, real world challenges, history, and what it truly takes to thrive. Whether you're a current first responder, aspiring to be one, retired, or the spouse of one, this is for you. Life is more than just making it through the day. Let's forge ahead together. Now let's get into it. All right. Welcome to Forging Wellness. Please welcome to the show, Noah Katz. He is just one pillar of Priority Fire Training. They are located in Phoenix, Arizona. Priority Fire Training was founded in 2023 in order to provide realistic fire ground training and skill development centered around the belief that all of their actions in training and on the fire ground should be rooted to the priority of saving lives, both firefighter and civilian. Priority Fire Training is comprised of experienced cadre members from different departments that all share in the belief of what is truly the priority on the fire ground and in life. They have a family-first mindset and are rooted to their beliefs that with this mindset, they should drive their actions to perform on the fire ground so that they can give someone else's family their best chance for survival. They do this by focusing their training around forcible entry, search and rescue operations, as well as water application and hose line management skills, in addition to fire ground survival and Mayday skill sets. They are committed to providing the best instruction that focuses on why they do things, not just how they do them. And it's through repetition and realistic scenarios that they create muscle memory and functionality. They offer small group training and department training through hands-on classes, as well as lecture and presentations. They do not teach anything that they do not believe in or use daily in their own operations. Now, I might mess up your motto here a little bit, but it's Pacta Sunt Servanda. Is that correct, Noah?
That's right. Pacta Sunt Servanda.
Sunt Servanda. Love that. So agreements must be kept. They honor their oath to the citizen and to their family by striving to be their best and provide first-class training services. I'll post this on the podcast, but you can contact them through Instagram at Priority Fire Training or email them at info@PriorityFireTraining.com. To give you an overview of today's conversation, we'll spend a little bit of time on firefighter training and philosophy, some training specialties and practical takeaways, the fireground mindset and culture, and then we'll wrap up. So with that, Noah, thanks so much for joining us today. Please go ahead and introduce yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Just thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to share some so a little bit about prior fire training and myself and to talk a little bit about what we do and how it's important to firefighters. Noah Katz, captain in the city of Phoenix. Got a little over 12 years in the fire service. I work in the west side of Phoenix. It's a very busy area. And, you know, one of my jobs with Phoenix Fire Department for a few years was the director of training. So super involved in training, have been for a long time. That includes some peer fitness stuff. So the physical side of training, as well as just an overview of training for the organization. And, you know, during that time, we felt some frustrations about not having training that correlated directly to the fire ground. And so we built priority fire training to kind of backfill some training needs that we saw in the valley here in Phoenix, in the area. And it's really progressed from there and grown. And we've had some really great feedback and some really positive messaging that's come from some of the people that have taken our classes. Just absolutely fortunate for the opportunity to spread some good messaging and to help firefighters grow in the area.
So with that, you pretty much dove into a little bit of the driving force behind priority fire training, but let's go into your motto a little bit. So agreements must be kept. So what does that mean to you in the fire service?
Yeah. Well, when we're coming up with the business, you know, we kind of thought, hey, we wanted to have a model that kind of said who we are, what we're really about. So we came up with that. So we didn't make that up. It's Latin, and for agreements must be kept. And it was kind of rooted in two things. One, it goes back to the handshake, and the handshake is the oldest agreement, form of agreement, right? People would shake hands, and that was when they said that they were going to keep their word, they kept their word. And as we know in today's society, a lot of times people say they're going to do things, they don't follow through on them. And that's not what we're about. We're about following through on our promises. And when I was hired in Phoenix, we didn't do an oath. So at that time, so they do now, but at that time, they didn't do an oath. But to me, it didn't really matter if you stood and raised your right hand and said that you were going to do it, or if you just simply pulled on that shirt and got on a fire truck with your turnouts. Either way, you made an agreement to the citizens that you're going to be your best for them. And so it was kind of our way of honoring that agreement. That we are going to do everything possible to make sure that we are the best, providing the best services, but also making sure that we're taking care of our brothers and sisters and doing the best that we can for them as well.
Okay. Absolutely. When we make a promise, honoring that in every capacity, I've always loved that mindset of, you know, just being true to what you say and do what you say you're going to do. So with that, your focus is on realistic hands-on training. When you go out to different departments and help them, you try and mimic realistic hands-on training. You also do provide some lectures and whatnot, but give me a little piece of what is that realistic hands-on training? What does that look like for you guys? Because I'm sure you guys can't burn everywhere you go, but how do you mimic realistic scenarios?
Yeah, it can be challenging, right? And I think there's a lot of great information out there. Obviously, you know, with social media and YouTube and all stuff, there's a ton of information out there. So people are having the ability to have a lot more information for training than ever before. And I think that's awesome. So for us, we take the opportunity to try to provide training that's realistic. What I mean by that is, like, put some pressure on people. We all know that, you know, hey, at the end of the day, like, you can perform skills in a parking lot, in a burn building, on a force laundry prop, but at 3 a.m. when there's flames shooting out of the roof and there's somebody trapped inside, that's not the time to figure out which way your halogen goes into the door. It's not time to figure out, hey man, maybe I can't mask up as fast as possible as I think I can, or I don't really know how to search. So it kind of goes back to that saying of, like, oh, we'll figure it out when we get there. And that's one thing that I certainly dislike. And so do CJ and Josh, my partners. So we try to make things as realistic as possible. And one of the ways we do that is we try to increase skill sets. And in doing so, we start, obviously, every time with why we do things. And one thing that we're very big on is saying, hey, this is not the only way to do things. This is a way, it's not the way. We're going to show you a way that's worked for us, successful for us. We've put it into action on the fire ground. We know that it works. But hey, it's not the only way to do it. And that is true of all skills. There's multiple ways to do things. And we try to find things that work the best for us. But also, if we're working with a specific department, we try to steer our training towards what they already do to make sure that we're in line with their organizational values, because we see that a lot of times. But with that being said, once that is established and you're saying, hey, this is why we do it this way, this is how we're going to do it. And then we start very basic and we kind of scale up from there. So especially, you know, in talking about search or forcible entry in search, when we start talking about search, we talk about why we search, how we're going to search, how we tripod, how we sweep with our hands, how we go into enter a room, why we isolate, why we ventilate. And then we can do walkthroughs of that. We put people in their gear, not breathing air. They have high visibility. They're able to do all of that and then kind of ramp up to there from there so that by the end of the day, they're in low visibility conditions. Now, like you said, it's not always live fire. So smoke machines, sometimes it has to be using the lens over the mask type of stuff. But we try to take away some of their senses, whether that be visual, whether it be auditory, try to increase their heart rate by doing some type of exercise before. So I think you've seen it, but when we did our forcible entry class, when we do that class, we do an assault bike challenge with the forcible entry door, where guys have to do 20 calories on the bike, get off the bike, go down the set of stairs. So now they're in tight quarters, and then they got to force the door from there. We know that guys aren't riding assault bikes on the way to a fire, but we do know that people have increased heart rate. Yeah. And so with increased heart rate comes loss of dexterity, becomes increased blood pressure, increased respirations. And so while you don't have all of the factors that you might have on the fire ground, you can induce some of those physiological factors that help increase somebody's skill set so they can perform when there really is real pressure on them. So that's some of the ways that we try to increase those skill sets under realistic conditions.
Okay. Real quick, Noah, I'm going to actually share one of your videos so that people can just take a look and see here. There's that assault bike, getting that hard work. All right, super simple. And I love that. And I actually commented on that when Nate shared that with me a while back, just simply for the fact, because you're right, we're not riding assault bikes, but it's not unlikely that our heart rate is up because potentially we just got woke up in the middle of the night when the tones drop. We're amped up because maybe we heard that there's potential for a victim. Those things all factor into that, not just the physical side, right? I mean, we could already have been doing physical stuff, which amped up our heart rate, but we've got the psychological side too that is playing into that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just put it in perspective, it's like at the station I work at, we're hiring a ton of people right now. So we get a new probationary firefighter every 3 months. And recently, within the last year, we had a guy come in and, when during the day, during training, the guy was pretty outstanding. We were really big on getting these guys to understand how to move hose through a structure. And he's working as a heel man. He's backing up the nozzle firefighter. And he's doing a really good job. He's branching off the hose. He's searching, doing all this stuff. Well, we go to a fire and it's like deer in the headlights, and guy is not doing anything that's been taught to him. And so it was kind of like that moment where you're like, man, like, well, why does that happen? And how do we ensure that in training, he understands what some of those pressures feel like. So when he gets in the real life situation, he doesn't have that moment of like, oh shit, like I don't know what I'm doing anymore. And that was truly it. It's like in training, like no issues, but put him in the real scenario and all of a sudden things are different. And so that's really what we try to focus on, is to try to eliminate that. And you can't eliminate all of it, right? I mean, we understand that, people's heart rates are going to be amped up. They're going to be excited, especially when they have reports of victims trapped, something like that. But if we can eliminate some of that and help people perform, oh, that's certainly what we're after.
That's awesome. So something that you said, you go into your trainings and you tell people that this is one way to do things, and this is a way that has worked for us, and it's not the only way, right? To me, that speaks to what you guys have done is really taken what has worked for you and specialized it, become really good at doing the thing.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. you can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Things that you do. So leaning into your strengths. And that's one of the things that I tell my probies quite commonly is you don't have to be good at everything right off the get-go. But what you already are doing well at, lean into that, become very good in that, and start teaching that to other people. Because, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I would assume that when you guys take that approach and when you go other places, that you learn from other departments just as much as you're teaching them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we learn all the time, you know, like, and you're exactly right. It's like, we had a probationary firefighter who is a UFC fighter of some degree, yeah. Right? Like he trains with some professional guys and fights at a pretty high level. And so we're doing victim drags and carries. And so I told him, I said, hey man, like you know more about dragging people and flipping people over and like than I do, right? Like, because yeah. You do that and you've been doing that since you were a kid. You've been wrestling since you were a little kid. So like, if there's something you can add to this, hey man, like just because you're young on the job doesn't mean that you don't have something that brings to the table that can improve everybody around us. And sure enough, where he's like watching us do some stuff and he goes, hey, I have something for you. He's like, why don't you try this? And he you know, basically flips this guy over super quick. And I was like, how'd you do that? He shows me. I'm like, dude, I love it. And so now we've been teaching that. And that was great. A few years ago, you know, so yeah, absolutely. You learn from people all the time. And I say, just because you're an instructor doesn't mean that you know everything. It doesn't mean that you should know everything. And quite honestly, you know, one thing that we talk about is, you know, it's okay to be vulnerable and to say, hey man, I don't know something. And vulnerability in the end, I think, shows strength. It doesn't show weakness. Because if we're given the wrong information and trying to be hard about it, like we know everything, it's not the right approach. And it's certainly in a fire service right now that really needs the brotherhood and the sisterhood to strengthen the people around us. And we need people to lean on. I think it's okay to be vulnerable and to not be the best at everything, not feel like you know everything. And if you don't, like there's people that can help bring you up. And I think that's a really important thing that we try to focus on.
Yeah, that's huge. I'm going to divert from the podcast altogether for just a second. I always like looking at people's backgrounds. I'm guessing that you're a girl dad.
Yes, I am.
I love that. I am as well. I see the pink balloons in the background and the playset. I love that. Just up until probably about a month ago, my room was completely filled with all of her play stuff. And we finally just got her own space for it. So
nice. Love it. Yeah, we just had a four-year birthday, so that's what the balloons are from.
That's awesome. Mine turned four last August, so
awesome. Yeah,
well that's cool. I think that leads us right into something that you guys are, it's a big part of what you are, what your mission is, and in your description where you put family first. Tell me a little bit about that, what that means to you guys.
Yeah, family first is certainly where we're at. So prior to fire training is made up of myself, CJ Schreifels, and Josh Brooks, the three of us. Just a little backstory. The three of us worked together at the same firehouse, really busy firehouse, multiple apparatus there. But at the time, they're turning around maybe 16,000 calls a year out of that station. So really busy place. We worked there together for a few years, and Josh and I promoted, and CJ went to another place. And we kind of all just, you know, when we were together, we trained a lot. We drove training. We were able to form a really close bond together on and off the job. And so that kind of transitioned into this business. With that being said, you know, all three of us have a family at different stages in life. You know, Josh has a son who's 18 years old. His son is, he's five. And then my daughter right now is four. So it's like, we're all kind of, you know, in different places, but we always said, hey, family comes first. Because at the end of the day, it kind of goes back to the performance mindset. And it's like, hey, I live in the city that I work in. So I live 2 miles from a fire station in the city that I work in. I know those people. I've trained some of those people. When my daughter's sleeping, you know, in her bed at night, I know exactly what I expect of those guys showing up, you know? And so my neighbor next door, that's not a firefighter, like they should expect the same thing. And so part of that was always like, hey man, we take care of our families and we make sure that our families understand why we're pushing so hard, why we train so hard, and we try to include them in that training. And I think some people sometimes think that family and fire service is separated. But to me, especially as a company officer, it's like, hey man, my daughter's at the fire station all the time. And that's super, super important to me. But going back to the times with the business, it's just like, hey man, we pick up slack for each other. And you know, if somebody can't be at a training, can't be at a meeting, it's like, hey, that's okay. We understand that the family stuff is it's almost getting to the point, I think, where it's kind of a buzzword in the fire service to say the family is first. But yeah. I think for us, like we really live it. And I think that's the most important thing is to live it. But then also talk about that and talk about how some of those lessons that we've learned and how we support each other, how we support our family, how we include our family and all this stuff so that other people can turn around and do those things too. So we're very, very blessed and fortunate to be surrounded by people in the fire service that have the same mindset. And so, yeah, very, very, very grateful for the family being involved in what we're doing.
Yeah, that's awesome, Noah. So it is a buzzword. I think firefighters in general live by buzzwords. Every so often, they're just circulating through, you know, whether it be resilience or, you know, there's a ton of buzzwords all the time. But at the same time, they exist for a reason. They came out of someplace really good, and then people latch onto them and use them. But that doesn't actually take away from their importance. And I think what stands out to me about that, talking about family and with Forging Wellness, we truly are looking at the whole picture of wellness. And if things aren't well at home, how do you really expect to be well at the job? We've all seen the impact that can have when somebody's home personal life comes to work with them and they're not in the right mind space to be there. And that is getting better and better, thankfully, I feel like, in the culture now. And I would just like to continue to see that, because when we have people firing all cylinders because things at home are good, that means that they're ready to go for anything that's coming at work. And to me, that's so big, because this has come up in a couple of my podcasts, a couple of my episodes, but I feel like, you know, obviously politics and extremes that exist there, but there is some extremes in the fire service right now of, you know, safety first culture versus, you know, you should be saving everybody all the time, like, you know, rescue. And it's like, yeah, I mean, those are both important. So in my mind, where I go with that is just the simple fact of safety in the sense of taking care of yourself, whether it's mental, physical, whatever it might be, so that we can honor the oath and the agreement that we made, and so that we can be the busting our ass to go in there and pull somebody out, because that is what we signed up to do. And we need to be in the right mind space to do that. We need to be in the right physical condition to do that. And we need to be competent to be able to do that. And I think that's what you guys, in my mind, are really teaching people, is competence. Because when you become confident in your ability to do the skills that you normally do, forcible entry, flow and hose, search and rescue, those are all things that we can do, like you said, without turnouts on or with good visibility, and things that we potentially train on a somewhat regular basis. But now, how much more confident are the people that you train when you actually put them through the paces of that assault bike and make them do it again? Because now they know they can do it under some duress as well.
Yeah. And I love your point, because ultimately, you know, I think to me, like, confidence builds competency. Right? When you're confident in something, yeah, you're more competent in performing those skills. And competency leads to fulfillment, because, you know, if you show up on a fire ground and you have the right mindset, you have the skill set, and you're able to perform to your highest ability, you may not save everybody, but if you can walk away from that knowing that you did everything that you could do, and you gave somebody their best chance at survival,
absolutely,
then I think we can live with that. And I can go home at the end of the day, and I can come home to my daughter, and I can feel okay with that, right? And that we know that the way that you come home from the firehouse does bleed over into your family. It bleeds over into your wellness. It bleeds over into, you know, how you go about your day and your mental well-being and your physical well-being and all these other things. So, you know, that's where the skill development really, I think, it becomes so important. You know, we had a guy take our class who took our class, and within a week of taking the class, he took our force launcher class. And in the force launcher class, we did talk about some search stuff, but he took the force launcher class. Within a week of taking the class, they pull up on a two-story apartment. He's their first in. He takes the door with his Halligan, lays out live fire layout. He's like zero vis, feels somebody, pulls somebody out, goes back in, searches down the hall, finds a seven-year-old kid in the bedroom, pulls a seven-year-old kid out. And so he calls me and he says, "Hey man, I just want to let you know, like, this is what just happened on this fire. And man, like, thank you guys so much, because, you know, I probably wouldn't have been as successful if I didn't take your class." And so I'm not saying that the class made a difference, but what that really struck home to me is, because I know him personally, and my daughter actually plays with his daughter, and you know, he's got four kids at home and stuff. And so I thought about it. If he didn't have that skill set and that fire didn't go the way that it went for him, and he had missed, it took him, say, 2 minutes to force the door, and they had missed that victim, and they walked right over that victim, and they went to the seat of the fire, and they totally missed that first victim that was, you know, 6 feet inside the front door. And then they didn't find that victim down the hallway until 15 or 20 minutes into the fire. Even if the outcome is the same in the end, right? Because both of those victims ended up perishing. But after days in the hospital with family being able to say goodbye to them and this and the other thing. So truly their best chance. Yeah. But if he wasn't able to do those things, how does he go home and be the best dad that he can be, the best husband he can be, the best friend that he can be, and all these other things? So that's right. Why I think the skill development stuff is so important, because it bleeds over into all of that. And even though the outcome is what it is, I think that he feels good about the fact that he did what he signed up to do to his best ability on that given night. So yeah, the skill set and the competence in those skills definitely bleeds over into everybody's well and off duty.
You're spot on with that. And I mean, honestly, you said you don't know if the class made the difference, but obviously it made all the difference to him. The fact that, I mean, you probably knew him beforehand, but like you said, I mean, he called you specifically to talk to you about that. So it absolutely did. So what you guys are doing is awesome. So you specialize really in forcible entry, search rescue, water application, and Mayday survival, you know, probably among other things. But out of those, what do you feel like is kind of the most overlooked skill in those areas? Where do you see people really needing the most work, or something that they don't work on in that skill set as often as they should?
I mean, you know, in talking like about those skill sets specifically, like in the area that we work, you know, the cities that
this podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
We work around here. You know, it's interesting because it's like you don't know what you don't know. And I think a lot of that stuff for us came about because we started traveling outside of the state. And, you know, Phoenix has a very rich tradition, and there's a lot of very great firefighters here, but there wasn't a whole lot of outside influence for a very long time here. So as Josh and CJ and I started traveling outside of here, you know, it was like, man, our eyes were wide open. And so CJ and I went to George Smoke Diver Program, and David Rhodes had at the end of the program had asked us to like give a review of the program and, you know, what you think. And I told him straight up, I said, "Hey, I'm being promoted to captain the day that I get home from this program. And I feel like I was in recruit school the entire time. And when I really break that down, to me, the biggest thing that I felt like I didn't know about was search. And so that's why our biggest focus has been on revamping search stuff with our business. And so I don't know if I would pinpoint a specific skill within search, but because a lot of that comes down to the mindset. But even coming down to little things like tool selection and why we carry a Halligan versus guys bringing in a 6 foot, you know, pike or a New York hook or whatever it is. And it's like, hey, like, you know, bring the tool that's going to be most efficient for your job at hand, right? And so, you know, search is definitely the thing that I think we try to focus on the most and see the most benefit from, because at the end of the day, all of those other skill sets support search. Right. So like force entry is like, hey, if you can't get inside, you can't search. If you don't have, if a line is not coming off the truck and going to the seat of the fire and making fire tack, like, then that's not supporting the search. When it comes to even the fire ground survival stuff, it's like, hey, that stuff makes you harder to kill. The better I am at knowing my FCBA, knowing my emergency procedures, knowing how to get myself out of a bad situation, I can push my limits just a little bit farther, knowing that I have the confidence and the confidence to be able to mitigate those situations, right? And so all those things kind of support the search skill sets. So yeah, I think that's definitely where we try to focus the most.
That's awesome. I you know, I obviously don't try and read into things too much as I do these podcasts, but that was going to be my guess, is search, because it's one thing that I feel we lack in our recruit academy sometimes. And so we have to go back in and reteach body positioning and how you really make yourself big in a room and where are you actually going to find victims versus just blindly searching everything. So leads me into my next question. For all of our listeners, somebody who's wanting to improve their search game, what's one thing that you think that you could give somebody that they could start doing today or working on to improve that?
Yeah, great question. I would say for somebody who wants to improve their search game, number one, they have to understand where to begin their search. Because like you said, like a lot of people, when they open that, or they enter the structure, be it the front door, the back door, garage, whatever it is, typically we see people that start their search the second they walk in the door. And there is some truth to that. We know from Firefighter Rescue Survey, there's 10% of victims are found within 6 feet of an exterior door. So Absolutely, that immediate area needs to be searched. Right? However, once that's done, we want to start our search as close to the seat of the fire as possible, right? Those are the most endangered areas, the least likely survivable areas, right? Or searchable areas. So we want to start there as soon as we can. So for us, like, we try to change that mindset. And if you can just change that mindset just a little bit to where you're going to start your search, I think people start to benefit from that immediately. And that has nothing to do with technique. That has everything to do with mindset and just having the idea of where to start those things. So that would be a simple fix in my mind. Like, in this conversation, it's a simple fix. It's not so simple for people on the fire ground because they haven't been taught that way. Like you said, dude, if you've been programmed to believe that you start searching when you go in the door and you put your hand on the right wall and you stay on that wall until further notice, that's not a good thing. And one thing that we talk about a lot is, how do you create the best firefighter? And to me, that is somebody who is the most educated, the most trained, and the most able to make independent decisions that affect the outcome of the incident. And so we don't want robotic firefighters. We want thinking firefighters. So those are some things that I think could help make an immediate change in somebody's search practices.
That's awesome. Because I totally agree. We need thinking firefighters, especially as the fire ground and fire behavior evolves. There is a lot of really good history and culture behind the things that we do. And you know, I get how some initial tactics and training were developed the way that they were, but leading right into my next question, your thoughts on the modern fire behavior that we have and how it really should impact training? Because I mean, just in your search answer that we just talked about, being that we potentially have less time under roofs and everything else because of the higher potential for collapse, it's that much more vital that we go straight to where we're going to have the best impact, right? So yeah, what's your take on modern fire behavior and how it should impact our training?
I love the question, because modern fire behavior 100% impacts the mindset and the training that we should be doing right now. And that kind of goes back to our motto at Prior to Fires, is putting people under stress to perform in realistic scenarios. Because at the end of the day, something like stretching a hose line, we know that that fires are reaching flashover temperature faster than ever before. So just in that, just talking about that's taking away searchable space. That's taking away space that we can even occupy in our own gear. Yeah, and we're the ones with that are protected. So having an understanding of what that those temperatures do to our gear and to our ability to perform is a big deal. And so, and we talk about that, like when you talk about somebody's SCBA mask, like their face piece, it's like, if you understand that your face piece will fail at 550 degrees, like that's really not that hot. If you understand that flashovers at 1200, we're talking about 550, it's like half of that. So it's like, hey man, so the time that you have to stretch that line and to get inside and get water on the fire, if you're on an engine, is less than ever before. So these guys that have, you know, 10, 15, 20 years on a job that are backseat firefighters that think, oh, I've been on a job a long time, I'm really good at pulling hose, I've been to a lot of fires, I don't need to pull hose. I'm saying that, hey man, those are still perishable skills. You can still improve. You can still become more efficient. You can still be more effective. And in doing so, you're going to be faster. You're going to be able to get water onto the fire faster, which is in turn going to allow people to be able to have that searchable space and to give victims their best opportunities to survive. So yeah, man, I think the training piece comes in because not only do you have to understand the fire behavior, use that fire behavior understanding to have a good size up of where to go and how to get there, but also the building construction piece, like you mentioned, I think that's a really underutilized bit of information right now, because especially in a lot of communities, you know, there's a lot of lightweight construction. Sure. And where I work, there's a lot of conventional construction because of the era in which the homes are built. The neighborhood I work in, most of the houses are built in the 50s and the 60s. So it's a lot of block construction, eventually framed, all this stuff. But even at that, it's like, well, how old are those houses?
Right.
Because it's 2020, it's 2025.
Right? Yeah.
So we're seeing new dangers with the building construction that we probably haven't seen before at failure rates of conventional construction that probably didn't happen 25 years ago, you know? So all of that knowledge is really, really super important. But at the end of the day, I think firefighters have to continue to want to educate themselves and then be able to take that information in snapshots and turn those unknowns into knowns as fast as possible, but also perform the skills faster.
Yeah.
If you can force the door in 10 seconds, you're inside, you're getting a size up, you're going to the seat of the fire, you're searching, you're doing all these things. You're not working in the same conditions that it would be 30 seconds later.
Right.
So time is of the essence now more than ever. And certainly that plays into even our response models. So I'll give you an example. So yesterday, I worked yesterday and we got a new probationary firefighter yesterday at the station. It's his third. So in Phoenix, they rotate three times. So this is his, it's like his ninth month on the job in the city. He was a firefighter for 7 years somewhere else before he came to our city. So he's got a little bit of experience with him. And I told him, I said, hey, it really doesn't matter who you are, where you came from. When you come here day one, what we do is we put our turnouts on for time. And that sounds so basic. And a lot of guys are like, that's stupid. I can do that so fast. I'm like, well, let's see how fast you can do it. And not only are you going to do it, but I'm going to do it. We're all going to do it because we all do it together. We all train together. But with that being said, I said, the point is I can't expect you to get your gear on fast, to get into the truck, to get seatbelted in, to get down the street so that we can arrive and then efficiently and quickly stretch a line, force a door, and get inside so that we can do what we're meant to do, which is to occupy the space interior to search. So we can't do all those things if you can't get your gear on quickly. And because of the fire behavior and how fast fires are coming to flashover temperatures and some of these really nasty fires that we're seeing these days, we have to be able to do the basic skill sets better than ever before. And so I guess if you break it all down, to me, it's hammering basics over and over and over again and becoming the most proficient you can at those things.
I really like what you said, just in the sense of efficiency, right? Everything that we're doing is working to improve that efficiency so that really we work smarter, not harder. And therefore, we probably keep our heart rate down doing that. I feel like a lot of times training does evolve into almost just checking a box for us sometimes. And so you guys really are, instead of checking the box training, you're doing performance-based training, in my mind. Do you feel like most departments have a culture of that? And if not, how do we get departments to shift their training culture to be more performance-based rather than just checking the box?
Yeah, great question. I don't think that a lot of departments have a performance-based training mindset currently. I think that we can certainly get there. But I do think there's a lot of check the box stuff and I get it. As I mentioned before, you know, I was the director of training for for my organizations. Like, I understand that schedules get packed. You have EMS, you have wildland, you have hazmat, you have technical rescue, you have all this stuff that has to fit into training blocks. And so sometimes things are overlooked. And if they look at the overall big picture and they're trying to jam in all this stuff, it's like, well, where do people focus on skill development or performance outcomes? And a lot of times I think departments rely on company officers to do that at the company level. Where that goes wrong is that if a company officer hasn't been brought up in a training culture of performance, then they don't know really how to do that. And it's not their fault. It's just that they don't really understand how to drive that. So one thing that we talk about in the business, so Josh and I both played hockey competitively, from kids all the way up. And so one thing that we talked about is, because we both coached hockey before we became firefighters, was just like in most sports, it's like, if I want to improve my hockey game, I'm going to seek out a coach that can help me skate better. I'm going to seek out a coach that can help me shoot better. Mm-hmm. I'm going to seek out a coach that maybe gives me some insight on how I can think about the game and maybe forecast and have the mental side of the game too. So like, I'm seeking out skill development only to go back to my team to be a better performer on my team. And if you think about that in the fire service, it's a very similar game. Like you operate on your engine or your truck or your rescue, whatever you work on, in a team of three, a team of four, a team of five. Well, if you go out and you develop your skill set in force entry, in search, in mayday mitigation, and whatever it may be, you bring that back, you've just increased your team's ability to perform just based off of increasing your own skill sets. So I would hope that organizations at some point will see the benefit of that. And much like a professional sports team may bring in somebody to, you know, in baseball, maybe they bring in a hitting coach, maybe they bring in a pitching coach. I would hope that at some point the fire service is able to put some ego aside and say, you know what? Our organization needs a search coach.
Yeah.
Our organization needs a forceful entry coach. Our organization needs a fitness coach. Our organization needs a mental health professional. Whatever it is that they need to focus on, that they bring in people to help move those things forward, because every organization needs some outside influence to help drive those things forward and hopefully change those cultures so that that does go back to the company level. So now the company level can perform and train and then be better for it. So I guess that's the long-winded answer.
Man, there's so much that I could unpack with that. That's something that myself, Eric Haskins, have really been looking at up here in the Treasure Valley. We actually both got the opportunity to go down to South Metro in Colorado a year and a half ago, and they're doing that with the fitness stuff. You take pure fitness as an example, best intentions, but really the amount of information that we're giving peer fitness trainers to go back and train an entire department is pretty minimal compared to somebody who went to college specifically for that and really is an expert in it and has potentially lived it as well. You know, we have to balance that a little bit because obviously we need somebody who knows what we do as first responders. But that's the thing with what you're talking about, bringing in specialty coaches, you know, a search coach, a fitness coach, a forcible entry coach, all those things really can have a huge impact. And potentially there's a lot of cost savings to that because just in the simple fact that we looked at a fitness coach, you bring in that expert. Now I don't have to send 10 people from my department to a peer fitness train. I have one person who already has that training. I pay them appropriately, but now, say that fitness coach for me works an 8 to 5. Well, my first task for that fitness coach is they're going to do all the programming for Recruit Academy. They're also going to actually specifically coach the PT at Recruit Academy. So programming, it's going to take a couple months build up prior to Academy. But during Recruit Academy, that's only taking 1 hour really out of their day to coach that. That leaves a solid 7 hours for them to work on other things, which is our line personnel, create programming for them to potentially go out to stations and do a workout with crews, or just, you know, talk with people about some of the concerns they have when it comes to an injury and working out or anything along those lines. The possibilities really are endless in my mind when it comes to employing an expert or even contracting an expert for a certain amount of time. So I really like that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I mean, we've even done that to some degree with the business. It's like, you know, for a small department or a department that doesn't want to pay, you know, to have an entire department training done, like I totally understand that. You know, that is a big, there can be a lot of cost to that depending on the size of the department. But to have an expert come in and train some people in those certain skill sets, and then that those skill sets grow organically within the organization is a really big deal. And so we've been able to do some of that. And I think, you know, just like you're saying with the wellness thing, it's like, hey, at the end of the day, you know, you need to find people that are true experts, right? Not somebody who in your organization who's, and I use fitness as an example, you know, but it's like, just because somebody likes to work out doesn't mean that that's right. The best person to teach other firefighters how to work out. Does that person have a degree? Does that person have the experience in coaching? Has that person traveled and, you know, to seminars and develop their skills and know how to talk to people, and not just the high performers, but the low performers. Right. And that's the same in skill development, be it search, be it forceful entry. It's like, hey, it's not a one size fits all program. And I think that's something that I'm very proud of with what we do, is that we really try to focus on individuals, not just jam something down somebody's throat and be like, this is how you do it. Because at the end of the day, especially like in search, it's like we all should know that, you know, body positioning is a really huge deal when you're searching. You want to make yourself be able to spread out in the room. You want to be able to you know, have your chest up and help conserve some of your air. We want to sweep with our hands. We want to do this kind of stuff. But not everybody can work in a tripod position. Yep. Somebody had three knee surgeries. They're not doing that. So how do we adapt to that person and help them be the best that they can be? And that's where that being an expert in those things really plays into it. So yeah. Absolutely. Sure. I think that'd be a huge thing for the fire service.
It's a really great just overall comparison that you made, as far as especially the high level, not just being able to talk to high level performers, because the fire service is diverse in so many ways. And the reality is, family first, those are our brothers and sisters that we are working with. And we don't want them to just get by. We want to figure out ways to make them just as successful as everybody else, so that they're high performers as well. I got a couple more questions for you before we wrap up. First one is going to be, where do you see the role of humility playing into, of course, being a high level firefighter, but also when it comes to training, like where does that fit in what you're doing?
Yeah, I absolutely believe in being humble. I think humility is a huge character trait that is absolutely necessary in training. Because like I said earlier, even as somebody who's teaching classes, I don't know everything. I'm still taking classes. I think that you have to continue to evolve. And if I was teaching a class and I'm just saying, hey man, this is the training and this is the only way to do it and this is how we're going to do it, I don't think people are very accepting of that, number one. And the biggest thing is that we talk about in training, it's something that we're very proud of, is that not only are we training, but we're developing relationships with people that last way after the training is over. If you come to a training for us and we get to talking and I know, you know, where you work and what your family life is like and that you have kids or you don't have kids or something that you're into outside of the fire service, like that's a connection for us to bond over and to share. And that relationship grows and develops. And so those are conversations that go beyond the training. So we train you on forceful entry. Well, 3 months down the road, you send a text. Hey, brother, how's it going? Hey, had a question for you about something. Yeah, what do you got? Well, hey, dude, we saw this door. Check out this picture. What do you think? Mm-hmm. But that's because we have a relationship. I'll give a shout out to my friend Kevin Pfluger out of Texas. You know, like that was an organic relationship. I met him at a conference over a beer. And fast forward a few years later, like I've taught in Mexico with him. Awesome. I've been to a whole number of conferences with him, like, and we're texting back and forth all the time about training stuff, about fire stuff, about family stuff. But that's a relationship that was built over a humble conversation. And I think that's something that I learned, is that the better we are building the relationships, the better the message is received when it comes to training and skill set. But then those relationships build off of that and have a lasting impact, not just an immediate impact.
I really like the way that you phrase that, because I feel like a lot of times we talk about not being afraid to fail in training. That's what we want from people, is to fail and to learn from it. And we want them to do that in training. but not be afraid of that failure because we don't see it as such during training, in my mind. So the way that you phrase that with building relationships first and approaching that all with humility, when we build those relationships and this now becomes a safe space for everybody down there, people don't feel like the trainers are out to get them. People feel like this is a place where I can just grow and be better. You just said that very well in the building relationships way versus any other way that I heard. So I really like that, brother. Last one for you. What's one lesson you've learned the hard way that you now try and pass on through your training?
I've learned some hard lessons, definitely. And I think the biggest lesson that I learned is it is easy for people to mistake your passion for arrogance. And I'm a very passionate person in all things that I do, my family, you know, my passion for the job, for working out, for whatever it is. I go all in when I go in on something. And I know that about myself with the training stuff. You know, I'm as guilty as anybody else, but especially after coming back from Smoke Divers and some of the other classes that I've been to, I was ready to set the world on fire that we needed to 100% change the way that we do things. I'm fortunate that I'm a company officer, so I control my station and my crew, and my guys are all bought in on that stuff. But it was weaponized because all of a sudden it's like I got a group of 6, 8, 10 dudes that are right there with me, ready to kick in doors and do things. And what I realized that is that changing the approach and the way you approach those things could be incredibly beneficial. You know, I think you know, Alan Bernacini obviously was the fire chief in Phoenix, and so you know we know a lot about his quotes and stuff here. He always said, "Don't sacrifice a relationship for an outcome," and that's something that I really try to pass on to people because I unfortunately have soured some relationships with some people that I was very, very close with because I was so passionate about something and just wouldn't take no for an answer. So I think in the approach of those things, that could have been done a little bit differently. I'm certainly not apologetic for what I believe in. I certainly don't waver in the things that I believe in, but I do think the approach of those things could have saved some relationship that quite honestly, it's sad to say that that's happened, and I'm certainly working to repair those things. But Bruno was at it right all those years ago. Don't sacrifice a relationship for an outcome.
Well said, brother. That is a great way to wrap up this episode. Just people first and approach, being tactful in what we do can go a long ways. So what's next for Priority Fire Training? Where are you guys going from here?
We're always looking to increase our opportunities. And if anybody ever is interested in booking a class with us, we're happy to talk to them and try to fill up our calendar and kind of go from there. So, you know, we'll see what else comes.
Sure. Best way to do that, Instagram and your email.
Yeah. The email info@priorityfiretraining.com. Or find us on it.
So just a quick recap for all the listeners. Priority Fire Training, real world high performance fire training that saves lives. A philosophy that really revolves around why over how, and then some muscle memory through repetition, and then commitment to your mission overall. With that family first, fire ground ready mindset, truly does go into that performance based training that we talked about, which equals best performance under stress. So Noah, once again, thank you so much for coming on today. Really, I will post all of your info into the episode and really looking forward to, you know, seeing what you guys do in the future.
Thanks, Jesse. Appreciate the opportunity, man. And yeah, thank you very much.
That's it for this episode of the Forging Wellness Podcast. If you found value in today's conversation, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with someone who could benefit. Your support keeps this mission going. Want to help us grow? Consider making a donation. Every bit helps us bring more impactful content your way. Follow us on Instagram at ForgingWellness208 and check us out on YouTube. Thanks for being a part of the journey. Keep forging your wellness, and we'll see you next time.